Shalom, everybody, and we welcome you to this week's 5-Minute Update, where we look at the current news events and correlate them to major prophecies of the end of days, where we focus on the nations dividing the land of Israel and the city of Jerusalem, which will result in the judgment of the nations. The judgment of the nations is war between the nations and then economic collapse. The nations will restructure from this into one world government, one world currency, in fulfillment of Revelation chapter 13. And from the perspective of the God of Israel, the reason why he's allowing this to happen is the tribulation period is the transition time from the Gentile nations ruling over the 12 tribes of Israel while they are scattered in exile, judging them for dividing the land, and then the Messiah gathers and unites the 12 tribes of Israel, wherein he will be revealed to his people in the world and be glorified. And so that's what we focus on here in the 5-minute update. But before we actually go to the news articles, I'd like to do a couple things. And first of all, to give you an update regarding Mark's status. And Mark is getting out of rehab today, and so we praise the God of Israel for that. And everything regarding Mark and has just absolutely been miraculous. Everything along the line. It was miraculous that when he got hit in the head by the falling tree, that didn't kill him. It was miraculous that someone found him in a timely manner. Miraculous that he was able to be transported to a hospital over an hour away and had consciousness the whole time. But he had internal bleeding, and the doctors didn't really necessarily believe he would make it through the night. But with your prayers, the God of Israel has answered our prayers. And Mark then got out of intensive care in about a week. Then he didn't stay in a hospital room, a regular hospital room, very long, and went to rehab center. He's been in rehab center for a little bit over a week, and he's progressing well enough there at the rehab center that they are allowing him to leave the rehab center. And I went up this week to see him at the rehab center, and so they did all types of therapy. They tested his mind, his memory. They did physical therapy. He did some walking and some exercises on his legs, and respiratory therapy. And so Mark got an offer from somebody in Maine to help him through the rehab process so he doesn't have to be in a rehab center. And Mark and his family have accepted that very generous offer to be taken care of by a family in Maine. And this family specializes and works in the rehab care area. And so we praise God for them that they've given of their heart to help Mark out and help his recovery. So it still may be several more months before Mark is fully recovered. His broken bones in his neck, he's had 7 broken bones that still needs to be given time to heal. So he's got to be in a neck brace still for a while. But he is progressing quite well. His mind is totally well. He has short-term, long-term memory, and so this was part of the testing of him that they did at the rehab center. And you know, when you have head injuries and you have internal bleeding, cracked skull, nothing's guaranteed. in the natural. And so the fact that he hasn't lost any of his brain functions or other aspects of his body that's related to the brain functions is once again miraculous. And so we've had such an outpouring of support for Mark. Your prayers, everybody's praying for Mark, and also your commitment to help him and his family financially during this period of time. It's just been absolutely phenomenal. And so Mark has been overwhelmed. I'm overwhelmed by your love and support. And we ask you for that, and you have responded. And we want to thank you so much for that. And the Patron family really appreciates everything that has been done for them. And obviously, Yeshua preserved Mark's life. And that means that he's not done with Mark, and he's still got to use Mark in these days ahead for his glory. And so we look forward to Mark being used by the Lord to be a blessing to Yah's kingdom, just like he is going to be using all of us. The whole body needs to come together during these difficult times. We need each other, as Paul said, that there's no part of the body that is independent and not needful of another part of the body. So that's your update, a very good update regarding Mark. And next, I'd like to let you know that Monty Judah and myself are sponsoring a trip to Israel, November the 7th through November the 18th. And there are those of the congregation who are going to be going on that trip to Israel. And we would love to have you join us in going to Israel. If you've never been to Israel, it is a life-changing experience. If you have been to Israel, it's always great to return. There's always something new to see. And by going to Israel so much, we have gotten an opportunity to get connected with Judah in the land as well. So if at all that it's possible for you to come and join us, we would love for you to join us. Once again, it's November the 7th through November the 18th, and you really need to start planning now for that trip. So if you're interested in going, you can visit the Hebraic Heritage website, hebroots.com or hebroots.org or eddiechumney.com, and you can find links there regarding the Israel trip. Look it over there. If you would like for me to send you a brochure of the Israel trip, right into Hebraic Heritage Ministries, that would be Post Office Box 81, Strasburg, Ohio, 44680. Just right into the ministry, Hebraic Heritage Ministries, Post Office Box 81, Strasburg, Ohio, 44680. If you're interested in getting a information packet regarding the trip to Israel. So you can either peruse online and or you could send in for an information packet. What is contained in the information packet, you could also see from the links that are online. So whatever you prefer, we would love to have you come and join with us. And as you know, in going to the land, we will look at the land and tour the land from a Hebraic perspective. So let's get on with the news update for this week. And most of the update is going to focus on the current situation and status of the peace process. And we have, once again, some very important developments this week. The first article I'm going to share with you is from WorldNet Daily, April the 7th. as reported by Aaron Klein, the headline reads, "In an unprecedented move by the United States, it seems that the United States is bargaining on behalf of the Palestinians. In an unprecedented move, the U.S. has been conducting negotiations with Israel on behalf of the Palestinian Authority, according to a senior Palestinian Authority negotiator and sources in the Israeli government. The U.S. has been calling for the resumption of indirect talks with Obama administration officials, publicly proposing to serve as a go-between to facilitate dialogue between Israel and the Palestinian Authority. Sources in both the Palestinian Authority and Israeli government told WorldNet Daily that talks are underway on a number of issues, including future borders and security controls for a Palestinian state. A senior Palestinian Authority negotiator, speaking on condition of anonymity, said, rather than act as an intermediary, the United States has been negotiating with Israel on behalf of the Palestinians. This is a Palestinian source that is saying that the United States is negotiating with Israel on behalf of the Palestinian position rather than being an intermediary. And the article goes on to say, and the United States are assuming all Palestinian positions in bargaining with Israel from the Palestinian side. This account was confirmed with sources in the Israeli government who said such behavior by the U.S. government is unprecedented. On Tuesday, Chief Palestinian Negotiator Saeb Erekat told reporters the U.S. has reached a dead end in attempts to revive the Middle East peace talks. But a senior Palestinian negotiator told WorldNet Daily that Erekat was referring to Israeli opposition to a Palestinian demand to freeze all Jewish construction in eastern Jerusalem. The negotiator said the Palestinians are pleased with the position taken by the Obama administration on the Israeli-Palestinian issues. And the only way that they would be pleased is if the United States is taking the Palestinian side. Also reported by Aaron Klein, WorldNet Daily, April the 8th, the headline is, Obama spies boost monitoring of Jews. The Obama administration in recent weeks has stepped up its monitoring of Jewish construction projects in eastern Jerusalem and is protesting to the highest levels of the Israeli government, even small building or improvement projects, WorldNet Daily has learned. Obama is calling to halt all Jewish construction in eastern Jerusalem for 4 months as a confidence-building gesture to start talks with the Palestinians. According to both Israel and Palestinian sources, the consulate apparatus has stepped up its monitoring of Jewish housing in eastern Jerusalem. The Israeli sources said the U.S. government is protesting to Netanyahu's office any sign of Jewish building, such as the site of a bulldozer in Ma'ale Adumim, an eastern Jerusalem Jewish neighborhood. Previously, under the Bush administration, the consulate kept a general eye on Jewish Jerusalem, Judea and Samaria construction, receiving much of its information from non-governmental organizations. Mitchell's apparatus takes things to a whole new level. They are watching very closely, an Israeli official who is aware of the U.S. government's construction monitoring activities previously told WorldNet Daily. Jewish leaders in the West Bank, Judea and Samaria, previously told WorldNet Daily the consulate makes no efforts to hide its activities. They come out. They tour our communities. They try to interact with our leadership. David Ha'avri, spokesman for the Shomron Regional Council in Judea and Samaria, told WorldNet Daily in August. They drive around the towns, check up on what's going on. They try to mingle with us to get more information on what we're up to and what we are doing, he said. And now I have much to share with you regarding this next development. And this article is from the Washington Post, and it is written by David Ignatius, Wednesday, April the 7th, and the headline is, Obama weighs a new peace plan for the Middle East. Despite recent turbulence in U.S. relations with Israel, President Obama is seriously considering proposing an American peace plan to resolve the Palestinian conflict, according to two top administration officials. Everyone knows the basic outlines of a peace deal, one said of the senior official, citing the agreement that was nearly reached at Camp David in 2000. Now, that was between Ehud Barak, Bill Clinton, and Yasser Arafat. He said that an American plan, if launched, would build upon past progress on such issues as borders, the right of return for Palestinian refugees, and the status of Jerusalem. A second senior official said 90% of the map would look the same as what has been agreed to in previous bargaining. The American peace plan would be linked with the issue of confronting Iran, which is Israel's top priority, explained the second senior official. He described the issues as two halves of a single strategic problem. We want to get the debate away from settlements in East Jerusalem and take it to the 30,000-foot level that can involve Jordan, Syria, and other countries in the region, as well as the Israelis and the Palestinians. Incrementalism hasn't worked, continued the second official, explaining that the United States cannot allow the Palestinian problem to keep festering, providing fodder for Iran and other extremists. As a global power with global responsibilities, we have to do something. He said the plan would take on the absolute requirements of Israel's security and the requirements of Palestinian sovereignty in a way that makes sense. The White House is considering detailed interagency talks to frame the strategy and form a political consensus for it. The second official likened the process to the review that produced Obama's strategy for Afghanistan and Pakistan. He said the administration would formally launch the Middle East initiative by this fall. And commenting on that in the Weekly Standard, in an article written by Elliot Abrams, April the 7th, the article or his commentary reads, "Obama to impose terms on Israel" is the headline you didn't read in David Ignatius' column in the Washington Post, which I just read to you. The story ran under the title Obama's Mideast Plan, which Ignatius describes as proposing an American peace plan to resolve the Palestinian conflict. But the substance is clear. It is a threat against Israel by the Obama administration, and particularly by National Security Advisor James Jones. The giveaway is this line, quote, "The fact that Obama is weighing the peace plan marks his growing confidence in Jones," end quote. Now, who do you think was Ignatius' source for that remark? Apparently, Obama and his team are frustrated by their inability to get Israelis and Palestinians to negotiate a deal and have therefore decided we'll just impose one. Ignatius reports approvingly that Obama came to the conclusion that he should impose a peace plan after meeting with six former national security advisors. The first to suggest imposing terms on Israel was Brent Scowcroft, and he worked with the Bush administration. He was seconded by Zbigniew Brzezinski. He worked with the Carter administration. And next, I want to share with you a conversation from CNN's Situation Room, which is conducted by Wolf Blitzer. And this was April the 7th, and it's regarding this issue. And the headline is "White House on Brink of a Major Shift with U.S. Policy." There's a new word today that the White House could be on the brink of a major shift in longstanding U.S. strategy, U.S. policy toward the Middle East. The Washington Post is reporting that President Obama is seriously considering proposing a U.S. peace plan to try to resolve the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. And Wolf Blitzer says, let's talk about this with our guests. And the two guests that he has This is the Situation Room on CNN with Wolf Blitzer. Is David Ignatius, columnist for the Washington Post, and David Gergen, CNN senior political analyst and former presidential advisor. Just to set the stage, this is Wolf Blitzer talking, because it's the U.S. policy toward the Israeli-Palestinian conflict to always to try to facilitate negotiations, but let the parties themselves negotiate and come up with a final resolution, and not to come up with a U.S. peace plan that would be imposed on the parties themselves. That has been repeatedly rejected by U.S. officials. But right now, there may be a change in U.S. policy. David Gergen, CNN senior political analyst, former presidential advisor, says, well, you're absolutely right, Wolf. And David Gergen goes on to say, but this president and his administration has met and, you know, have had high ambitions for the Middle East. They increasingly believe that the Palestinian-Israeli struggle is tied to the war on terrorism. The president is frustrated now. And so David Ignatius wrote this important story that they are sure that they are now looking at that possibility, and the New York Times has now come along behind David and confirmed that, or confirmed his story. Wolf Blitzer says, and David Ignatius from the Washington Post is here. Wolf Blitzer says, but now, David, you reported in the Washington Post today that there may be a significant change in that longtime U.S. strategy of not trying to, quote, impose a peace settlement on the Israelis and the Palestinians. David Ignatius then says, well, in the end, you can't impose anything that the parties aren't prepared to accept. But I do think that the Obama administration has become frustrated with the incrementalism, the step-by-step nature of its approach to the peace process as adopted a year ago. Senator George Mitchell has been our emissary. Based on his experience in trying to and succeeding in negotiating peace in Northern Ireland, he argued, let's go carefully, talking to the two sides, and only after that initial phase and getting some concessions should we come in with bridging proposals of our own. And a year later, I think the administration is moving toward a decision that the approach just hasn't worked, and it's time to be much more explicit about what the U.S. sees as the basic elements of a peace deal that will work. Wolf Blitzer then says, because I've heard, David Ignatius, from my own sources in the Obama administration, and you're right, they are totally frustrated by all this, that whereas in the past they would want the Israelis and the Palestinians to get close, then they would finally come up with bridging proposals to try to solve it that way. What I hear you saying, and based on this extraordinary meeting that you reported that the president participated in recently at the White House, is that at this stage they would come up with a U.S. blueprint and then try to shove it down the Israelis and the Palestinians? David Ignatius replies, I think the idea, Wolf, is to do two things. First, to summarize the basic elements of agreement that have been merged since the 2000 Camp David talks between the Israelis and the Palestinians that came very close to producing a deal, and subsequent discussions that have narrowed the differences. As one senior administration official said to me when I was working on this story, everyone knows the basic outlines of the peace agreement that will work. I mean, at this point, there are really no mysteries. It involves a very limited right of return for Palestinian refugees. It involves exchange of territory to get borders that work. It involves some type of understanding about Jerusalem, and Jerusalem's probably the toughest issue of all. But everyone knows what the parameters of the agreement are. It's just a question of getting to that point. And I think the administration has concluded that you've got to push that harder. And the second piece of all this that I reported this morning was that the administration wants to tie this to Israel's biggest security concern, which is Iran. As a senior official said to me, in a sense, these are really two halves of the same problem. That the Iranians use the Palestinian issue, this sort of open wound in Arab and in the Muslim world, as a rallying point. And they don't deserve to have that. But the administration's idea is, let's push together on both. And Blitzer says, but, and David Ignatian says, let's be very tough with Iran and also try to deal with the peace process at the same time. So we see here from what I've shared with you so far that the United States is presenting the Israeli perspective. They are very closely monitoring things in Jerusalem and the West Bank regarding any Israeli activities there. And they're frustrated by a quote-unquote lack of progress in the peace talks. And, of course, lack of progress is just a way of saying that the Palestinians aren't getting everything that they ask for. So in this frustration, the U.S. is looking at the distinct possibility of imposing a peace plan upon Israel. So it appears that Israel has replied this way. From Haaretz, April the 7th, the headline is, Netanyahu says Israel will not be pushed to peace. Israel will not accept a Middle East peace agreement that is forced upon it by external forces. I think very clearly he's referring to the United States there. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu reportedly said in private meetings in recent days, sources said Wednesday. Netanyahu reportedly told close aides that it won't work and it won't be acceptable if a settlement is forced on us, stressing the need to ensure proper security arrangements as part of any future peace deal. For that end, the Prime Minister reportedly said Israel would have to retain a military presence along its eastern border with Jordan, adding that any agreement that doesn't allow for those measures will not be accepted. Netanyahu's comments came as the Washington Post quoted senior U.S. officials as saying earlier Wednesday that Barack Obama was weighing the possibility of submitting a new American Middle East peace plan by this fall. And reading between the lines, perhaps the word that the United States is seeking to impose a solution upon Israel may be the reason why Netanyahu canceled a trip to the United States that was regarding meetings on a nuclear summit. And this is from the New York Times. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu of Israel has canceled his plans to attend the Nuclear Security Summit meeting in Washington next week and will send a minister in his place, Israel and American government officials said Thursday. The official declined to explain the last-minute cancellation, but Israeli news media reported that the prime minister feared that Muslim states were planning on using the occasion to raise the question of Israel's nuclear arsenal. Israel is widely believed to be the only nuclear-armed power in the Middle East, but it refuses to discuss the issue and has declined to join the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. The official said that Dan Meridor, the Minister for Intelligence Affairs, would attend the meeting, which starts Monday. So I think, in my opinion, that was the official explanation, but the real explanation was to show Israel's displeasure with the United States for leaking out word that they are seeking to impose a solution regarding the peace process upon Israel. And then from a website, english.people.com.cn, the headline reads from April the 9th, the Palestinians urges the United States to endorse a Palestinian state. Chief Palestinian negotiator Saeb Erekat on Thursday called on the United States to take the initiative and announce that it would recognize the future Palestinian state. The Palestinians don't want to see new ideas to settle the conflict in the Middle East. They want international resolutions to be implemented. What are the international resolutions that he's speaking about? He's speaking about the UN ruling in 1947, where the United Nations ruled that there would be a two-state solution regarding the Middle East. And UN Resolution 181 to make Jerusalem an international city. And UN Resolution 1397 that says the solution in the Middle East would be a two-state solution. So because UN resolutions are supposed to be international law, it right now is international law that Jerusalem be an international city. It right now is international law that there is a two-state solution and that there would be a Palestinian state. That is now UN law because these UN resolutions have already been passed. And that is what Chief Palestinian Negotiator Saeb Erekat is saying. We just want those UN resolutions implemented. We don't need any new creative ideas. We just need the United States to agree to implement these. And it appears as if the Obama administration is seriously considering doing so. Erekat explained that the Palestinians want the United States to go to the Security Council and announce its acceptance of the international law, which accepts Palestinian statehood with Jerusalem as its capital. Erekat went on to say that the U.S. administration should start working on settling the final status issues related to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. And so, you know, when the prophecies say in Joel chapter 3, verse 2, that the nations would divide the land of Israel, when the prophecies say in Zechariah chapter 14, verse 2, that the nations will divide the city of Jerusalem, the prophecies are not clear as to how it would happen. Whether it's the nations imposing their will or Israel in the end agreeing to the pressure of the international community. And so it could happen in either way. And right now, it looks like things are more weighted toward the international community imposing dividing of the land and dividing the city of Jerusalem. Because Israeli governments and Israeli prime ministers in the past have been willing to create a Palestinian state, Ehud Barak in 2000 was willing to divide Jerusalem. Ehud Olmert was willing to establish a Palestinian state, willing to divide Jerusalem. Zippy Livni, the current prime minister of the Kadima party, that is the party of Ehud Olmert, is willing to create a Palestinian state, is willing to divide Jerusalem. Because the Israeli governments have been willing to do that. That's why we've been looking at the possibility of Israel agreeing to this, but at the same time, it doesn't necessarily have to be with Israeli agreeing to it. It could be imposed, because the prophecies just say the nations, it says the nations, would divide the land. And all nations will come against Jerusalem. So the emphasis is what's on the nations are doing. So we don't know whether the pressure will be so great and perhaps threatening Israeli isolation that in the end even the Netanyahu government will capitulate, or whether the Netanyahu government will take a stubborn approach wherein it will be imposed from a United Nations viewpoint. And we'll just have to see which way it plays out. But nevertheless, the United States is seeking right now, as we speak, to put this pressure upon Israel. They're not going to be waiting for another year to try to resolve the issue. That's why we need to watch it closely. Next issue, or the next article from the Jerusalem Post. Obama says that a nuclear Iran is inevitable. The U.S. president says the current course would provide them with nuclear capabilities. And it is inevitable that Iran will produce nuclear weapons as things stand, U.S. President Barack Obama said in an interview with the New York Times on Monday, seeming to indicate his administration was now resigned to a future including a nuclear-armed Iran. See, after saying that it's unacceptable, it's unacceptable, it's unacceptable, now they're giving hint that even though they want to impose sanctions to try to get Iran to change its mind, that if sanctions don't work, they may allow Iran to initially get a nuclear weapon. President Obama stated he was now convinced that the current course they're on would provide them with nuclear weapons capability, though he didn't say how long it would take to do that. He dodged the question on whether he shared Israel's view that a nuclear-capable Iran was as dangerous as one that actually possessed weapons. And I have two more articles before we conclude this week's five-minute update. And the first one is something that I don't believe has been given a whole lot of attention, but it's potentially a very serious international development. And that is, there's been an overthrow of the Kyrgyzstan country in the Kyrgyzstan government, which is in Central Asia. There is a battle over Central Asia, and Russia and China does not want the United States to control Central Asia. There's a very important pipeline that goes through Central Asia, which the United States would like to control, and there is an air base of the United States in Kyrgyzstan where they do operations from regarding Afghanistan. And so this potentially hurts America's efforts in Afghanistan. So this is from PressTV.ir. Kyrgyzstan moves to shut U.S.-run Minas airbase. And Kyrgyzstan's new leaders have said they intend to remove a U.S. military base which currently serves as the premier air mobility hub for U.S.-led forces in Afghanistan from their soil. The interim government, led by ex-Foreign Minister Roza Otunbayeva, has said it wants the U.S.-based Manas closed down for security reasons. The remarks came amid growing uncertainty over whether the new Kyrgyz authorities would allow the U.S. to use the base. Russia, which itself maintains an air base at Kant, just 20 miles from Manas, has been keen to block U.S. military presence in the region. Russia has been increasingly concerned about U.S. military's prolonged presence in the geostrategic important region. The ousted president, Kurmanbek Bykiev, has refused opposition's demands that he resign. Meanwhile, protesters in the capital of Kyrgyzstan have demolished and burned the house of the toppled president. The opposition claims to be in full control of the capital, the armed forces, and the media. Earlier, the interim government allows police to use firearms and shoot looters across the Kyrgyz capital. Wednesday's unrest that toppled the Kyrgyzstan government claimed 75 lives with over 1,000 people injured. So this is a very important development because it is a part of a really chess game of strategy that's going on that Russia, I believe, is doing regarding the United States. That is not getting a whole lot of press attention, but nevertheless, I believe it's a very significant development. And then our last article is from the New York Times, and the headline is, As Greek Bond Rates Soar, Bankruptcy Looms. And you're not following this, there are three countries in Europe that are on the verge of bankruptcy: Greece, Spain, and Portugal. And there's much discussions going on about whether the European Union should bail out Greece, because if they bail out Greece, they'll have to bail out Spain and Portugal as well. And it's creating division within Europe regarding how this should be handled. One day we hear news that, you know, everything's going to be fine, but at the same time, there's a tremendous amount of uncertainty regarding these things. So the article says, as interest rates on Greek debt spiral upward again, the question facing Europe is no longer whether Greece has the political will to cut spending and raise taxes to curb its gaping budget deficit, but the issue is whether Greece will run out of money before it gets the chance to do so. With the rate on the 10-year Greek bond reaching a high of 7.5% on Thursday, up from 6.5% just 3 days ago, the cost of insuring against a Greek default hit a record high. The message from the market could not be clearer. Artfully worded communications from Brussels, that is the head of the European Union, will no longer suffice. To avoid bankruptcy, analysts say, Greece needs a bailout from Europe, and fast. There is no longer about liquidity. It's a solvency issue, said Stephen Jen, former economist at the International Monetary Fund, who is now a strategist at Blue Gold Capital Management in London. And the last thing I'd like to share with you, and there is a clip out there on the internet in an interview that was done to Jim Rogers. Now, Jim Rogers worked with George Soros, very famous person who does trading in currencies. And, you know, George Soros is connected with MoveOn.org. And Jim Rogers, he, a few years ago, moved himself and his family to Singapore because he sees that the United States' future is bleak and it's not good to raise his daughters. And so he thinks there's a better future in Asia. So he's moved to Singapore. And he frequently is interviewed on financial talk shows. And in an interview that he gave this week, and I don't have the clip for you, but I listened to it this week, Jim Rogers was asked to comment about his comment that he made regarding the United States, that with the passing of health care and the things that's happened since the financial crisis in 2008, he made a comment, that is Jim Rogers, that the United States is now a socialist communist country. And he was asked to comment on that, and he said, Jim Rogers said, what is there to comment about? The United States government has taken over the automobile industry, the insurance industry, the education industry, student loans, the financial industry, and now the healthcare industry. And when government runs all of these major industries, that is the classic definition of socialist communism. So he said, you know, what's there to comment about? These are facts now. And so thought I would share with you that comment by Jim Rogers. And you probably could find his comment there on YouTube. So wanted to let you know that I am not going to be here at the congregation for the next 5 weeks. Next week, I'm going to be speaking at a conference that is being hosted by Bondservant Ministries, Gary Katz, in North Carolina. And if you're along the East Coast, we'd encourage you to attend that. And then the following week, I'm going to be speaking in Virginia. These meetings are posted at the Hebraic Heritage website, where you can click on Where's Eddie At? And then the 3 weeks following that, I'm going to be in Texas. May the 1st, I will be speaking in Dallas, Texas, specifically Greenville, Texas. And then the following, on May the 2nd, I'll be in Kerrville, Texas. That is 1 hour west of San Antonio. And then I'll be doing some filming for GLC, do 3 months more of programming for GLC. And I hope you are watching those weekly programs on GLC. The weekend of May the 7th, I will be in Amarillo, Texas, speaking to Freedom Baptist Church there in Amarillo, Texas. Then I'll be going on to Oklahoma and making some teachings, which will be put into DVDs. And I will be with Monty Judah at Lion and Lamb Ministries. And so probably I won't be giving five-minute updates. I may, but it's doubtful. But we are still going to have meetings here at the congregation. And Pastor Bill Turner is going to be subbing and helping us out here and conducting services. So we're still going to be doing our thing. And since Mark's not able to help out, of course, because of his situation, Pastor Bill Turner is going to help out. And in order to help you to get acquainted with Pastor Turner, we are going to conclude this part of the five-minute update. We're going to take a song break and reload things, and then I'm going to be doing an interview with Pastor Bill Turner, sharing with you how we've been together over the years to help you get acquainted and familiar with him, and you will enjoy our testimony regarding this. So we'll do this after a song break, and we will restart Ustream as well. We will record on Ustream this interview for those of you who would like to listen to it at a future date. So that's going to conclude our five-minute update for this week. We pray that it's been a blessing to you, and it's helping you to be a watchman on the wall and be prepared for the days and the times in which we're living. Remember, Yeshua said, when you see these things happen, look up, for redemption draws nigh. And so if we are close to him, we will make it, and we can be encouraged. Shalom in Yeshua the Messiah. Amen.